Oregon House of Representatives Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness is now open. Thanks for coming today. We have three panels, one panel of one, but he's a very special panel. It's going to be good. We've got, I believe, some of the finest folks involved in emergency management today to be talking. As we know, today is a Tuesday. Tuesdays are emergency preparedness here in the committee. Thursdays, of course, are Veterans Days. I wanted to, for the members that are here right now, and you can help brief our other members when they get here, there's a handout that basically goes over the work groups that we talked about briefly on Thursday. Before we get to introduction of possible measures, I want to provide an opportunity if there's any questions about these work groups. I'll go down them briefly, and that'll kind of explain the concepts and what we're hoping to get. The ARES amateur radio structures is going to be led by Representative Post. Again, these work groups are informal in nature. The lead can invite whoever you'd like to be involved, a part of that, government, nonprofit, private, public, whoever you think can help you get to ground truth. And then the idea really is have two or three conversations about what is going on in the community, what are the needs in the community, and then we can have a conversation after we know a little more than we do right now. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay. Second committee is the Citizen Corps Credentialing and Document Security Committee. Representative Parrish wanted that third part added to her work group to make sure that we have certainty of government and that certain forms and documents are protected as well. The third work group is existing and potential training synergies with DPSST and OEM, which is going to be led by Representative Esquivel.
We just volunteered you.
A work group?
Oh, a work group.
Work group.
I'm surprised it's not a task force, Mr.
Not
Chair.
Yet, but the day is still young. Airports with Representative Meek taking the lead, and I know the Director of State Aviation as well as a number of other stakeholders are looking forward to that, including some discussions with Oregon Military Department and their Aviation Wing. The next committee is Seaports and Coastal Responders, going to be led by Representative Boone, and we're going to try to invite some folks that are out in the audience today. There's happened to be county commissioners that are interested in those type of things. She's going to be leading that when she returns. I'm going to be focusing on scalable response recovery facilities, an idea that we have talked about before about using public spaces, fairgrounds, state parks, county parks as potential staging grounds, and hopefully coming back with a useful opportunity there. Critical Ground Roots is going to be led by Representative Lively and whoever else you'd like to involve in that. It's absolutely essential as we look at a potential transportation package moving forward that we pay attention to seismic realities to make sure that we can actually have life safety routes available. The 911 Status and Technology Horizons work group will actually be led by me. I want to emphasize to everybody this is not a consolidation work group discussion, but rather understanding what's on the horizon in terms of the enhanced 911 systems, what types of technologies are expected to be coming down the pike, and quite frankly, learning how the changing world of mobile apps and mobile phones relate to 911 emergency technology. So that group will be led by me, but again, any member of the committee, anybody that's involved in emergency management, citizens at large are certainly invited to participate. We also have a local government training work group that has not, no one has signed up yet to lead that, looking for a volunteer that would like to be involved with that, but that doesn't have to be resolved today.
I'll take that for it if you'd like.
Like I said, Vice Chair Esquivel just volunteered for that. I think that's great.
I should have known better. I was in the military.
Yep.
Never
I think if you can actually also pick Representative Lively's brain on that as well, being a former mayor, I think that that'd be helpful. One of the things that is sometimes critical in emergency management is really knowing what government can do, what government can't do, knowing the roles, responsibilities, and being able to leverage those capacities. And sometimes when we're in the middle of putting out a fire, we forget some of the things that we need to remember. The requirements really are as follows. You call the stakeholders, have an evaluation of existing capabilities, identify priority actions or investments, and then establishment of timely conversations about what we should be doing in the future. We all know we're going into a legislative session with not a lot of money, but that doesn't mean that time stops. So we need to come up with the best plans so when we do have some resources, we can actually try to keep more people safer and property secure. Any questions on those? Okay. We're going to open a brief work session on introduction of...
Do you want to go over?
Well, this, we added the...
Those who don't show get assigned. That's what Representative Esquivel is talking about.
Yes, we added document security to the...
No, committee. I like that. I'll
See?
Do that.
All right.
I have no problem with that.
So we're going to open a work session for possible legislation moving as committee bills. Work session is open. I want to remind everybody that your vote today does not mean you support the legislation, does not mean that you even like the legislation. What it does mean is that we can at least consider the legislation. So we're going to be introducing... He can?
Who has the motion?
We haven't put a motion yet together. I was going to read over the LCs first. Do we need a motion first?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead. You have the floor.
Mr. Chair, I move that the following legislative concepts to be introduced as committee bills. LC 1473, dated 1 November 2016. LC 1490, dated September 28, 2016. LC 1501, dated September 28, 2016. LC 4033, dated 26 January 2017. LC 4045, dated 26 January 2017, LC 4046, dated 6 February 2017.
Okay. Any questions on this before we move to a vote? What? Read them back? Okay. Representative Esquivel moves that LC 1473, dated November 1st, 2016, and LC 1490, dated September 28th, 2016, and LC 1501, dated September 28th, 2016, and LC 4033, dated 26, 2017, and LC 4045, dated January 26, 2017, and LC 4046, dated February 6, 2017, be introduced as committee bills. Is there any other discussion? Okay, seeing no discussion, please call the roll.
Representative Lively?
Aye.
Representative Meek?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Post?
Aye.
Vice Chair Booz?
Excused.
Vice Chair Esquivel?
Aye.
Chair Evans?
Aye. We have a majority. Work session is closed and motion passes. All right. Any other issues before we go to our panels? Okay.
Mr. Chair, one thing. Mm-hmm. If you'll indulge me.
Of course.
I'm going to bring down a bill that, remember last session when we did the POW MIA flag mm-hmm. bill? And it was for public buildings, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Well, some people have said that that doesn't apply to them in public, like schools said they don't, even though they're public. So this bill rectifies that situation and it spells out what a public building is.
Okay.
It's unfortunate we have to do this because this, I thought it was very disrespectful to people missing. But I will bring that down if we'd like to sign in as a group.
Okay. Yes?
So real quick, kind of an omnibus hodgepodge bill, like little random things that come up that don't have their own bills during the session. I mean, one of the issues that came up was when a couple years before you got here, we did a pretty hefty license reciprocity bill, and like we left out veterinary technicians or something, right? So, and then the little issue with driver's license plates and stuff, like mm-hmm. can we throw that all into one big as it relates to veterans? And
if the lawyers will allow it.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know what the relating to clause span, but I wouldn't have a problem with that.
Okay, so I don't know if we want to maybe keep a tally of things we hear this year, how we would do that, or if you want them to, us to send those to you, or
I can.
Okay.
We also have a placeholder for veterans bills if we need a separate.
And I have one too, but I'm happy to use it or give it up if we need to split those types of things. But I just, I'm starting to hear like, what about this and what about this? And of course, we've already drafted, so I want to make sure we are able to do as much as we can in the time that we can. So,
okay. I think that's fair.
All right.
Any other comments? Okay. Well, we're going to be opening an informational meeting, and I'd like to invite Mr. Harriman up to explain his role in Oregon resiliency.
Okay.
Chair Evans and members of the committee, I'm Mike Herrmann, the State Resilience Officer and the Officer of Governor Kate Brown, and a resident of Milwaukee, House District 40. I'm honored to speak to all of you today as an Army veteran who served 22 years on active duty, 15 of those years with the Oregon Army National Guard. I feel privileged to speak with this committee. The State Resilience Officer position was created in 2015 with House Bill 2270, and I was confirmed by the full Senate on May 25th, 2016. The National Academy of Science in 2012 described resiliency as an ability to prepare and plan for, absorb, recover from, or more successfully adapt to actual or potential adverse events. Oregon's event is the Cascadia Subduction Zone, and the last complete rupture was January 1700, 317 years ago. In February 2013, the Oregon Seismic Safety Policy Advisory Commission, known as OSPAC, presented to the 77th Legislative Assembly the Oregon Resiliency Plan, as directed based on House Resolution 3 adopted in April of 2011. OSPAC offered the following definition of seismic resiliency goal. Oregon citizens will not only be protected from life-threatening physical harm, but because of the risk reduction measures and pre-disaster planning, communities will recover more quickly and with less continuity vulnerability following a Cascadia Subduction Zone earthquake and tsunami. The Oregon Resiliency focuses on providing legislators with information and data so that you can make critical investments each biennium, starting with the 2013 session and continuing over the next several bienniums to build up the resiliency of the state's infrastructure. The early investments that have started are building blocks for future investments, but make no mistake, we still have a long road ahead of us. On June 13, 2013, Mr. Josh Bruce, the Director of Oregon Partnership for Disaster Resiliency at the Community Service Center, University of Oregon, provided written testimony to the Joint House and Senate Committees on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness. At the hearing, Mr. Bruce's comments still ring true today. While the specter of a Cascadia Subduction Zone earthquake and devastating tsunami that will follow is the primary driver for the Oregon Resiliency Plan, resiliency, by definition, is a multi-objective, all-hazard, all-threat endeavor. Therefore, strategies and or investments to improve Oregon's resilience to earthquakes must consider potential impacts from other hazards and threats. Concerns I have focused on include economic, geopolitical, environmental, societal, and technical risks we face with that will happen to Oregon when the Cascadia Subduction Zone unzips. The Oregon Resiliency Plan made great strides in bringing resiliency discussion forward, but the 2015 article, the really big one, in the New Yorker, got the entire country talking. There has been a significant shift in the attention being paid to natural hazard and emergency planning in Oregon. Climate change considerations, aging infrastructure, homelessness, poverty, among other community issues, only add to the sense of vulnerability and the importance on human and technological threats and impacts, and will continue to require investments both at the state and local level. With the big topics, transportation, healthcare, and revenue reform keeping all of you busy, I would just like to remind this committee to keep making investments, many of which are in the governor's recommended budget, such as the continue investing in the seismic rehabilitation programs for schools and emergency service facilities. And other bills will no doubt be introduced to this committee and possibly additional committees that each of you serve on. A few of the major issues this biennium I ask you to consider: mass care, mass displacement planning for Oregonians, tsunami zone development, safety and building assessment, government, business, and residential, seismic safety retrofitting programs, and state-managed reinsurance roles to improve earthquake policy solvency. One key project to bring to your attention, the governor's office will spearhead a request, in your testament it says FEMA, but it's from the Department of Homeland Security, to conduct an in-depth regional resilience assessment, what we call the Oregon Resilient System Project. This project will study multiple north-south east-west multi-transportation corridors, including various combinations of highway networks, rails, aviation, airports, maritime and ports, and supporting components, and the impacts of disruption of these systems. Without a refined understanding of transportation systems capabilities, vulnerabilities, seismic mitigation strategies, officials are unable to adequately plan and set priorities for the necessary mitigation, response, and recovery actions. This study will seek to understand the vulnerabilities and impacts to Oregon's transportation system from the Cascadia Subduction Zone earthquake scenario. It will synthesize disparate studies and analyze to provide consolidated assessments of expected damage to the state and our region's transportation infrastructure, examine current response and recovery plans with a primary focus on fuel, medical, food and water, pre-planned, pre-scripted missions that will be affected by the anticipated damage, and examine the alignment of ongoing mitigation efforts to protect damage to transportation assets and current emergency and recovery plans. And in summary, I ask you to review resilience in Oregon as a multi-hazard and all-threat endeavor. I thank you for the opportunity to testify today before you and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Harriman. Before I ask a question, panel, committee, anybody have a question? Really? We're going to let them off that easy? All right.
It's disappointing, I know.
So this isn't a question as much as just a thank you for what you're doing. I notice in the back, for the record, those that can't see, Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department, Mr. Stuckey, is in the back. We're going to be hearing from the Military Department and OEM in the next coming days. But I just want to say thank you for the work that you're doing coordinating all the different folks that are trying to do the right thing. And I think Oregon, for the first time, is actually starting to move in the right direction for this. So thank you for the work that you're doing. You don't always hear that when you serve in the government.
You don't.
Thanks for what you're doing. Appreciate it very much.
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay. I'd like to call up Commissioner Thompson from Clatsop County, Judge Schaefer, as well as Commissioner Tim Freeman. This is the second panel, and one of the great things about Oregon that I'm looking forward to hearing you guys talk about is how counties and local governments really are the front line for how emergency management is done. You guys do it at the local level. Our job as a state is to support you, and it's been a very busy few years. I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say. Whichever one would like to start, please introduce yourself and go ahead.
Chair Evans, members of the committee, I'm Gillam County Judge Steve Schaefer. I'm also the chair of the Association of Oregon Counties Public Safety Resilience Committee. I work along with Commissioner Thompson on that. I really appreciate the kind words. To be perfectly honest, yeah, there are many times that we are that ground level and dealing with emergency situations, and it can be a little bit difficult. Over the past year, our association president and through his leadership, Umatilla County Commissioner Larry Givens prioritized county resilience. We focused our conference on trainings on this topic and created emergency resource guides for our 120 county commissioners, created the resilience subcommittee, and will work over the next year to discuss important emergency preparedness issues. And also, we created the state's a sister county program, which helps promote partnerships between counties from east and west side. This last summer in Gillam County, we had a wildfire that burned almost 65,000 acres within our area. We had volunteer firefighters from six counties that helped our county volunteers fight this fire. It took us 6 days to get this thing extinguished. These mutual aid agreements allow for the counties to be there for only 48 hours, though. After 48 hours, they need to move on and go back to their own counties and protect where they're at. This created some real problems for our emergency managers in coordinating maybe two counties in there for a couple of days and two counties later. So some difficulties with that. This increased coordination and communication among the counties will be a key component in a successful emergency preparedness model. We need increased training for the elected officials. This will be very important. Last year at our annual conference, we were pleased to have both Colonel Flick and Jenny Damaris. And you will hear from, I know, Colonel Fleck here in just a moment, provide some basic incident command systems trainings that many current and newly elected county commissioners badly needed. Our sister county program has paired together approximately 8 counties at this time with intergovernmental agreements to assist each other with resources. One recent success story was Umatilla County sending resources to Tillamook County during their recent flood. We also had numerous counties assisting Grant County during the wildfire situation that they had a couple years ago. We appreciate these strong partnerships, and we have with our county emergency managers and Oregon Emergency Management Association a great relationship. The support of that State Office of Emergency Management and Mr. Mike Harriman, who we just heard from, provide invaluable, and especially for small counties like mine, with limited resources, great leadership. At this legislative session, we look forward in ways that our counties can continue this partnership, and we hope that we're able to work with the state in creating a resilient Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the judge? We'd like you to remain just in case something pops up.
Sure, absolutely.
But, ma'am, go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Leanne Thompson. It's my privilege to be a Clatsop County Commissioner. My military experience is 5.5 weeks in the United States Marine Corps in 1967. Woman officer candidate. It's pretty limited. I may have a little more credibility with this committee if I tell you I'm now married to a Vietnam veteran of the Air Force. So I do have a little
Air
bit.
Force.
Air Force. Okay.
No, no partisan. She said Air Force.
There we go.
You couldn't stand it, Mr.
Okay.
Chair. You just couldn't stand it.
Okay. Yeah, he needs. Do you want to add now?
No, that's fine.
Okay, good. So expanding on Judge Schaefer's comments about how AOC views resilience, we believe that AOC and our 36 counties are uniquely situated to address the three aspects of resilience: prepare, survive, and recover. I prefer to think of it as flourishing, but I get a little grandiose about it. Our state is frequently challenged by natural, technological, and human-caused disasters, and we believe that AOC can be a convening and problem-solving entity dedicated to improving our counties. In Clatsop County, we face three key issues: infrastructure, planning data, and support and training for using citizen volunteers. For example, the lack of alternative roads, a back way, when the one and only road, US 101, in the southern half of Clatsop County is blocked. Now, that can be a traffic crash, trees blown down across the road, or flooding, all on a normal day at the coast. What would result from a Cascade earthquake event keeps me awake at night to contemplate. We need alternative land transportation routes. Because as you're probably aware, if there's a Cascade event, the river's going to be blocked. That Astoria Megler Bridge is going down. Seaside, point two. Seaside has an estimated 100,000 visitors on 4th of July weekend. With other holiday visitors, those visitors who are a part of the lifeblood of our economy, we probably have triple the permanent population of Clatsop County, and that's just in Seaside. So the planning number that's used is 37,000. On one day, triple that. On an average holiday weekend, we have an estimated 40,000 extra visitors in Seaside alone, based on information from the manager of the Seaside Convention Center. We need accurate numbers in planning for emergency situations. The numbers currently being used simply aren't adequate if you look only at the permanent population. Third point, citizen volunteers are training for community emergency response teams, CERT, Red Cross, Ham Radio, and Medical Reserve Corps in order to respond to disaster situations of all kinds. lack of organizations willing and able to absorb the costs associated with using them is a barrier. We need more support staff at the State Office of Emergency Management to allow communities to make use of trained citizen volunteers when emergency responders are overloaded. I mean, that's the definition of a disaster, is that we're overloaded. How do we use those citizen volunteers? We need some help in doing that. So we must also, if we could, consider the cross-section of issues that relate to emergency management and preparedness. It's a multidisciplinary challenge. Public health, land use planning, housing, public safety, transportation, and others. Coordination and collaboration across these disciplines is important, and I would say more than important. It's really life-saving. We appreciate our various stakeholder partners as well as the state as we continue to work through these issues. Thank you for the opportunity to share these thoughts with you today, and we look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Committee, before he starts, I want to make sure and give proper introduction to Commissioner Freeman.
The Honorable
Tim Freeman, who was a representative here in the legislature, who we miss greatly from being here, and who was actually vice chair of this committee. So welcome back.
Thank you, and opinions vary. thank you, Chair Evans, Vice Chair Esquivel, honorable members of the committee, and Representative Parrish. I appreciate
some
the chance
never changed,
to
be here today.
Welcome back.
We're going to work on that. For the record, my name is Tim Freeman. I'm a Douglas County Commissioner. And it's my pleasure to be in front of you today. I made a little joke at the beginning because I'm going to talk about some pretty serious stuff, and it's pretty difficult for me to talk about it still. So on October 1st, 2015, about 10:30 in the morning, I was getting on the freeway going north up to the Forest Service to talk about killing trees. Got a phone call on my phone and a number I didn't recognize. And I had this hunch that I needed to answer it, and I did. And it was my son calling on a phone that he had borrowed. And he informed me that there had been a shooting at the school, and that there was somebody at the school shooting people at our college. And he had got a group of kids and made their way to a safe area and didn't know what to do. And so from that moment on, my world, the community I live in and the people around me, lives have changed. And I want to talk a little bit about some things we can do to make a difference in the future. It's very important for my community to find a way to help others. It's part of the healing that we need to go through. So the first thing I want to do is talk about all those people that showed up to help. Within minutes of the shooting, I was on campus and my phone started to ring. The governor called me. Members of the legislature that I had worked with called me. Our two U.S. senators called me. The director of the Oregon Health Authority called me. And they all said the same thing. Do whatever you need. We've got you. Take care of your community. And I cannot tell you what that meant to me and eventually to my community. People from all over the state just came to Douglas County to help. They came without asking. We had sheriffs who had been through situations like this literally stop what they were doing, turn their car around, and drove to Douglas County to be there to help us. We had people from, of course, the state police, from the state fire marshal's office. We had our federal partners show up. For the first couple of weeks, we had people from all over this country showing up to help. And it was wonderful. And then it was overwhelming. We didn't know what to do with them. People sent things that we had no idea what to do. Folks showed up from Billy Graham's ministry to pray for us. Compassion dogs showed up to be on our campus to help the people that were there. People sent boxes of compassion rocks. We didn't know what to do with compassion rocks. They had little sayings on them. But we were overwhelmed in every manageable way, in every meaningful way you can think about. We had more going on than we were capable of dealing with. And I say this all the time. That day, one person showed up to do something wrong. Since that moment, everybody's done everything right. And we have some amazing people from around the state to thank. And I'm not going to spend my entire time talking about thanking people, but I could. So some of the things that went really well. So we were lucky in many ways in that we were not as isolated as some of the counties around the state. We were close. This college campus is less than a mile from the state police office. There happened to be two detectives from the city police department very close to the campus, closer than the state police. From the moment they got on campus, nobody else was hurt except for the shooter. There was no other injuries occurred after that. And from that moment on, we've been in recovery mode. Up until even last Friday, I chair a committee that's working on the recovery of this, and we got some great people working on it. So I want to talk a little bit about things that we as counties and the state can do better. So there certainly was an abundance of resources in those first few days and weeks, and then everybody went home. I mean, they thought it was like a flood or a fire. The fire was out, the incident was over, everybody went home. And when you have a trauma like this in a community, it's not over in a couple of weeks. It continues, and it still continues. And some of those early days and some of the things we missed on the way to healing and recovering our community, we can do better at. And I want to share some of those ideas with you. So as we get up here, we always have an ask. And my ask isn't for money. I'm not here asking for resources. I'm here asking that we talk about how we train for it have available what I'm going to call one call phone number at the Oregon Emergency Management for man-made casual events or man-made disasters. We have an amazing response for natural disasters. You heard some of my fellow commissioners and the judge talk a little bit about some of the things that we do well at. So firefighting, floods, landslides, those type of things, our emergency management state folks do a fantastic job. But I believe there's some training that needs to be done on these man-made disasters. And really, some of that training can be as simple as how county governments are managed. We have a saying at the counties, if you've been to one county in Oregon, you've been to one county in Oregon, right? You heard a little bit about a road access issue that's an important to one county. You could talk to each of the counties and we could each tell you our challenge. And there's 36 counties and they're all different. And it's important that folks understand there is a sort of a different need everywhere you go. And man-made disasters are interesting. I had originally wrote down on my sheet a shooting. Then I realized that a man-made disaster could be another shooting. It could be a bombing. It could be a public building takeover in a rural part of the state. It could be a peaceful protest turned into a riot. These things can all overwhelm a county, and having the state coordinate with us would be very helpful. So some of that training could be as simple as understanding how counties are managed. So when you're here at the state, you clearly understand there's a separation of powers. So federal government, state government, and city governments, there's the legislative branch and there's the executive branch. Counties are different than that. So in Douglas County, different than the judge and other counties, the county commissioners, the three county commissioners, are the chief executive officer. We don't have a county administrator. So a lot of times when our federal and state partners show up, they say, okay, well, here's the elected officials. Let's get them in a room and make sure they have hot coffee. They forget that we have the checkbook. We have our public works department and all our staff available to bring resources to the table. And we need to make sure that where we can be helpful, that we're engaged and we're involved. I had the chance to go over to Harney County when their incident started over there in the first days, and that's one of the things I helped the judge over there focus on with the state and federal partners that were there, is what his role. It's confusing. He's a judge. Well, I mean, we got executive branch, we got legislative branch. Is he part of the judicial branch? And to take a few minutes and explain to our to the FBI and the state police what his role as a county judge was and how that worked was very helpful to him and his county as time went on over there. So just some training like that, I think, would be very helpful. What I kind of envision is something like a wildfire management team available to come down alongside a county when one of these catastrophic events happen and not take over, but to really be there to be supportive of. I will tell you, my fellow commissioners and I, the first 3 days, did not go home and sleep. We burned ourselves out immediately, and it was very difficult to recover from that. Right now, I think the law enforcement side of the shop's pretty well supported. I mean, I think they got that sort of sharing of services and you know, sort of a cross-section of how they're going to work when incidents scale up and scale down. That doesn't translate to the governance side. Law enforcement's very much about taking care of things. In our situation, like I told you before, most people got to the college, the law enforcement piece of the incident was over. And then the weeks to follow, we had people show up from all over. We had media there that I had never heard of. We had a TV station called Al Jazeera that came. And I was here. I mean, I've been in front of some media. Nothing like this. And just the challenge of dealing with that, we certainly could have used some assistance. So I'm not going to spend a bunch more time. I'm happy to answer questions. I do believe the state has tried to help, and they've been fantastic when asked. But I do think there is a need and a way to coordinate and train so when the next one of these things happens, we're prepared. And I would remind you, and I was part of this, the state's spending a lot of money on trying to prepare for an event, Cascadia event. The last one happened, I just heard a minute ago, 317 years ago. It may not happen again for another 300 years. I will promise you, in the next year, we will have another man-made disaster that we'll be dealing with here in Oregon. So there is some urgency to the work that we need to do. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions for the Commissioner or anybody on the panel? Okay.
So, Tim, thanks for sharing the story. When that happened and resources, monetary resources, flowed in, how were those dollars managed? Did they come from the state? Did you have to pull them out of your own, you know, pocketbook? I mean, certainly there were a bunch of GoFundMes that were out there for individual shooting victims and teachers and things. But, I mean, that's, to me, is one of the key pieces, that if a county has really good preparedness in place, a lot of times our response to anything is top down, right? The federal government comes in with FEMA, and the governor declares a, you know, state of emergency or whatever, and then the local folks are sort of left out in the cold. And so can you talk about how money sort of moved and resources moved, and was your county commission roped into those conversation, or was it really more of a top down?
So Chair Evans, Representative Parrish, thank you for that question. With the exception of a couple $100,000 to pay for some sheriff's office overtime, the community has yet to receive any dollars from the state for anything that went on as far as the recovery goes. We do have an ask. We were up here in front of the e-board, and that kind of got derailed, and we'll be back. I think there might be a committee hearing next week. We just received, so we're a little over a year and 4 months out, we received at the end of last year a notification of grant funding from the federal government. We spent a year identifying about $5 million of need, basic needs of recovery. I've talked to many communities that have faced similar situations in their community. We have an increase in every type of negative measurement you want to talk about, whether it's domestic violence, violent crimes, dropout rate at the schools, drug use, lack of being able to recruit professionals, people leaving the emergency service that were in the event. Anything you can imagine is happening. It's happened to other communities. It's happening to us. We've put together a consolidated list. The federal government, in their year-over-year process of applying for their grant, whittled that down to $1.2 million for the entire community, and it's a reimbursement grant with a bunch of hoops to jump through, and many of the agencies are reluctant to try to provide the services in fear they won't get reimbursed. So that part has not gone well.
I'd like to clarify. So two questions to that point. Number one, when you say many of the agencies are reluctant to, state, county, what agencies?
So, City of Roseburg. So they've spent almost $30,000 in attorney costs and preparation applying for a grant that would get them $10,000. And they're fearful if they go do the $10,000 of work, they won't be able to jump through the hoops. Some of the mental health folks, Chair Evans, I should have started that way. But there's many of the agencies. Battered Person Advocacy has an extra person they want for counseling, and they don't have resources to front-load hiring that person, but they can't get reimbursement until they hire them. So there's a bunch of stuff in the federal grant that is not helpful.
So what's the bottom line that would make you close to whole? What's the ask? You're not asking, but what's the ask?
I'm not here asking for that, and this is about all the counties. But
if you could get us that information, though.
It's $4 million.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I follow up?
Yep.
So I brought that question up because, you know, if we have a flood in Vernonia, we race out and we have funds, right? And it's part of our emergency preparedness where you do have sort of these man-made type events. And if they happen specifically in one locality, you know, we're asking the local jurisdictions to sort of pick up the cost for something that you could not have ever possibly been prepared for. And I think it begs the conversation as we talk about, you know, mitigation funds. We mitigate things like whether somebody's wolf gets, you know, wolf comes in and eats somebody's cow, right? Like, we have these types of conversations, but we don't for this particular instance of how we help communities monetarily, you know, that didn't have the dollars to expect an event that nobody ever expects to have happen. So I think bigger picture, I'd like to see us have that conversation.
And to that point, in actually 2009, there was a fund, the Oregon Disaster Recovery Fund, created specifically to help locals with matches because of the way the federal grants work. Mm-hmm. It actually still exists, but there's no money for it. And that's something that I'm hoping the committee can look at as part of our work groups as we move forward. But thank you very much for your testimony. And again, please keep us in the loop on what's not happening so you can have more ambassadors up here trying to make sure that your communities are given the tools they need to heal. And thank you all.
Again, thank you. Again, I'm here with all the counties. There is a need to coordinate with the state, and we're willing and ready to do that.
And one last question. If you could put your prepared materials on OLIS,
sure.
That would be helpful. We'll put it up there for you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're going to bring up the third panel, but hopefully the second panel won't go anywhere because we might be able to have a conversation afterwards. Third panel is Patrick Singh, All Things Public Policy Safety Manager Association of Oregon Counties. Mr. and I believe I heard Colonel Ed Flick, Emergency Manager Marion County, and Jenny Damaris, Emergency Manager Lincoln County. Thank you very much for coming to Salem. We're going to let you start it off there, Mr. Singh. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Patrick Singh. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. I have been with AOC for 4 years now, working on public safety and emergency management issues, so I look forward to working with you throughout the session. You can see that we have a very strong group of people who are experts in these fields, either through history or through experiencing them themselves. So our commissioners, we are very pleased to have the three commissioners here to chat about their experiences, as well as our kind of on-the-ground experts, emergency managers as well, who are all part of the county family. So I wanted to briefly touch on AOC's kind of structure and kind of background and how we can work with you through the session and the state kind of in general. First, some experience other than before serving at AOC, I was a LA, an aide for Representative Gene Cowan, who was the chair of this committee for, I think, at least two sessions. So it's a pleasure to be back here with you. And I think, Chair Evans, you were the governor's policy advisor at that time. So we had a chance to work on a lot of bills together. Outside of AOC, I work as a reserve sergeant with the Portland Police Bureau. I've done that for 7 years, so I've seen some of the craziness that can happen on the ground level and the need for coordination between multiple entities. So AOC is a membership organization of counties. All 36 counties belong to AOC. We represent not only the 120 county commissioners and judges in the state, but also, like I mentioned earlier, the entire county family. So county administrators, all other county elected officials, and what we call county affiliate and associate groups, which include emergency managers, 911 directors, sheriffs, are also part of our organization. So oftentimes when you see either Andy Smith, who works on veterans issues, and I coming before the committee, we are representing one of those many interests, but primarily kind of county government in whole. We have a legislative committee and a board of directors that meets monthly. You all are welcome to come at any time, second Monday of the month, and various steering committees that Judge Schaefer and Commissioner Thompson touched on. So we have steering committees in just about every policy area, just like the legislature. Emergency management issues are covered in our public safety committee. We also recently created our kind of subcommittee on resilience that's met just a couple times to kind of do a deep dive in some of these issues as well. So that's where we have a lot of presentations from Sergeant Harriman and our emergency managers and OEM and other emergency preparedness, prepare, recovery, and response type entities to educate our commissioners about those issues. So you'll see us talking about those issues throughout the session. Our executive director was here, Mike MacArthur. He's in the back. He leads our staff of about 20 folks. We have policy folks. We also have a county road program that works with our engineers and surveyors. So a lot of their emergency management county departments are under some of those. It's different structures throughout the state. We also, in partnership with the League of Oregon Cities, I guess own or manage city-county insurance, which is the insurance provider for the majority of counties and cities in the state who would probably be called upon in a lot of these disaster-type situations to come out and assess damage. We are very privileged to have a very strong partnership, as mentioned, with various stakeholder groups and state agencies, Sergeant Harriman, of course, and the Emergency Management Department, Office of Emergency Management. We are constantly in communication with them on whatever we can do to move policy and budget issues forward. Our main concerns really wrap around, and I think the three commissioners put it nicely, funding and infrastructure, equipment, and personnel. Whether it's a wildfire or an active shooter type situation, those are the concerns that we will always be trying to work with you on. The services and technology needs, of course, range from funding to 211 info line all the way to our 911 system, all of which are, of course, understaffed and underfunded. And so we constantly are looking to try to fill those gaps. We see our counties as your partners, the state's partners, in delivering these services and look forward to working with you through that process. So however we can assist throughout the session and beyond, we would like to do that. You can kind of consider me, you're in the building. Andy Smith and I, you're in the building resources for that, and we can help direct to any of our county level experts. And so with that, I'd like to turn it over to our experts, Jenny and Colonel Flick, to talk more about the work they do with the Emergency Management Association. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Evans and committee members. Thank you very much for allowing us time today. I am Jenny Damaris. I am the Lincoln County Emergency Manager, and I also serve as the Lincoln County Public Health Emergency Preparedness Coordinator. We're one of three counties that combine those services into one. I am also acting today as the Oregon Emergency Management Association's Western Rep. I hold that position, and I am the AOC liaison for...
Lots of hats.
Yeah, I do have a lot of hats. Yeah, so... appreciate your time for allowing me to be here today. Our OEMA focus area would be the collaboration between our private, public, and our volunteer groups within the five phases of emergency management, which are the prevention, preparedness, mitigation, response, and recovery. The county emergency managers, you will find, are a very united front in our opinions and our abilities, and so I will reserve most all of the rest of the time to my peer, Ed Flick, because I'm well-versed in his comments and support them.
Okay. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Evans and members of the committee. It's my privilege to be here and offer testimony. My name is Ed Flick. I'm the emergency manager for Marion County, Oregon. I'm also the vice president of the Oregon Emergency Management Association. I was hired by Marion County in 2014, following my retirement from active duty in the U.S. Army as a Special Forces Lieutenant Colonel. In special operations, a number of truths, hard-learned lessons guide how we shape our organizations. One that is particularly relevant today in this topic is not to confuse enthusiasm and capability. I have grave concerns that no matter how enthusiastic emergency management practitioners may be at the state and local level, emergency management organizations do not have the capability to accomplish what should be done to safeguard life, property, and the environment in Oregon. Too often I've seen important work that would best be accomplished at the state level left undone. Local emergency management programs have little capacity to fill the gap, particularly with federal support declining by nearly 18% to those programs this year. An example is the way the state approaches the development of the state hazard mitigation plan. Although the state hazard mitigation officer resides in OEM, the actual author of the plan works for DLCD. A third agency, the Department of Justice, is responsible for critical infrastructure protection. A fourth agency, the Office of the State Fire Marshal, is responsible for hazard materials planning. As a consequence, hazard mitigation plans often do not address all of the hazards we face. And as Commissioner Freeman pointed out, we need to think about all hazards, and particularly human-caused and technological hazards, in addition to the natural hazards that we are most familiar with. Similar gaps exist between OEM and OHA regarding the evaluation of health hazards, mitigation, and response. A more robust OEM staff could integrate the efforts of the various state and local stakeholders to produce better plans, making it easier for counties to conduct similar planning and improve the linkage between local and state plans. The Cascadia Rising exercise this past June presented numerous examples as well. In preparation for the exercise, the state of Washington fielded a statewide resource ordering plan that streamlined and standardized the process. We have no such process in Oregon, but not because OEM staff don't have the expertise, but rather because they don't have the time. It's important to note that the Washington Emergency Management Agency is substantially larger than OEM. During the exercise itself, OEM staff were overwhelmed, struggling to assemble a statewide damage assessment, coordinate requirements with state agencies, or interface well with the federal incident management team. All too often, local requests to the state were neither acknowledged nor acted upon. My concerns are not with the capabilities of OEM staff members individually. They are dedicated and talented public servants. There's simply not enough of them. According to OEM, there are approximately 40 staff members assigned. Only a few of those are funded by the general fund. Others are funded by grants or special funds like 911. The fact that so many staff members are funded in this matter significantly limits how the agency can deploy their staff. For example, staff funded for hazard mitigation planning are limited in how they may perform general emergency management functions like response. The fluctuations in grant funding year to year creates an environment of uncertainty for staff and management. A consequence of this situation is that all too often, OEM struggles to do more than their statutory and regulatory functions and has little bandwidth to provide subject matter assistance to local emergency management programs. A better funded OEM would provide more services to the counties commensurate with the threats and hazards we face. Unfortunately, I see no indication that OMD intends to grow OEM. In closing, how long can we afford to say that we're unprepared before businesses begin to relocate where there are fewer hazards? I encourage the community to find ways to appropriately resource and fund emergency management in Oregon. Thank you for this opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Committee members?
Well, seeing no questions. Thank you all for coming. So you know that there has been attempts over the last several years to do plus-ups for OEM that encompass both regional as well as centralized efforts. And I think your voice at this moment may be helpful in trying to push that that rock up the hill. As you know, this particular budget is most likely one of the most difficult that we've had. However, again, time doesn't stop. Emergency realities, I think, certainly have come crashing down upon us in a lot of different ways over the past several years. And thank you very much for what you do and for making the statements that you did. To the point that if you have heard any of the topics that we are putting together work groups on, I strongly encourage either you or people you think could be helpful to this, because the goal really is to set the table for the future legislature to be able to give you the tools that you need to succeed. So with that, I have, please, if you have materials to give, if you can give them so we can post them on OLIS so people at home can read them as well. Any other questions, comments for the good of the order?
Good of the order.
Good of the order. Good of the committee. All right. Well, seeing that we don't have any questions or comments.
I have one thing to say, and that's, you know, we're talking at a state level, we're talking at a county level, but we have to get down to the citizen level. I don't care what we do, we're going to have shortfalls in the system. Mm-hmm. You're talking the people, the possible devastation we're going to have, the infrastructure being gone, the ability even to drink water is going to be very vital to people. So people have to help themselves. And you go and ask anyone in your district or your area, do you have 2 weeks of food? I'll bet you 9 out of 10 will say no. So that's what we need to concentrate on, because we can help people, but they have to help themselves. And that's more important than us helping them. So.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, going to turn to our analyst to give us a preview of what we're looking at for the next meeting, and then we'll conclude. And please, if you have a moment, if you could stay in the audience, I'd like to follow up on a couple of things.
Thank you, Chair Evans. Members of the committee, for Thursday, we're looking at a couple more informational speakers. I believe we have two lined up and two House resolutions. It's a little bit kind of calm before the storm before we get into some meat and of the bills that will follow starting next week. So Thursday will be a little bit light.
Okay. Thank you. That closes the informational hearing. And without further business, we're going to adjourn the committee.